Hey, listen, if a couple of Rouge et Or fans want to get after it, I'll get down to a 3-point stance. We'll go for it.
You're on your own on that one, I think. My days doing that are over, Tom. You're on your own.
As if your knees can let you get in a 3-point stance, Tom. Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics for the penultimate episode of the Exit Meeting Series, episode 10, where we're talking Laurier Golden Hawks, and we have a very special guest. So, Tom, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I am doing well. Once again, a very special guest, exactly like you said, the voice of Laurier Golden Hawk football, former Yates Cup champion himself, Mr. Jack Moore, has rejoined the podcast once again. Always a pleasure to have you on, buddy.
Oh, always a pleasure to talk football with you guys. You know, we're in, early March here, and I get to talk about OUA football. I thought I wasn't going to be able to scratch that itch until at least July. Usually when I start talking about it at this time, people call me crazy and don't want to hear anything about it because there's so much time before the season starts. So to be able to jump on here with you guys and talk some OUA football, and more importantly, Laurier Golden Hawk football, is always a pleasure for me. So I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity.
Well, the pleasure's always ours, and it was about 6 months ago, if you can believe it. The podcast dropped August 23rd when we had you on. We had two episodes with you. We were so lucky enough to have you on the tiers and then the season preview pod. And when I think back to those episodes, the biggest takeaway for me was, A, you getting us hyped about all things Laurier Golden Hawks, but specifically about the young absolute phenom in the linebacking core of Ethan Gregorcich. So I was deliberating where I want to start, and I want to go this route because I want to get us fired up to begin with. Jack Moore, this is going to be a little word association game off the jump. I say the name Justin Cloutier. You say what?
You know what? I don't know what to say to that. I feel like I've backed myself into a corner. I had like one good opinion in 26 years of living on this earth, and it just so happened to get everybody so fired up for football season, and now I just feel like I have to reserve every single opinion back to myself. I can't speak out loud because I'm hitting 1,000, and I'm just going to stay there. I think I'm going to retire.
Well, so I'm starting at the end of the season because, I mean, Gregorcich had such a phenomenal year, and I know we're jumping to the out-of-conference stuff, but when he didn't win the U Sport Rookie of the Year, I mean, maybe we're not getting further than that, but I mean, you know, we kind of represent our little corner of the U Sports pie here in Ontario. Of course, the folks in RSEQ, and I know you have a lot more connections across U Sports, but, you know, from me and Tom's standpoint, we felt like we got robbed, you know? And I say that collectively from the OUA. I mean, this kid, this year, we can maybe just make it more about Ethan to start with or however you want to take it. But, like, that was a shock to the system from our hearts here at the 55 to not see Gregorcich win it at the U Sports level.
You know what? And I think I was going back and forth. I can't remember the anger that crossed my eyes. It was just seeing red for a couple of days after the national awards. And I think Tom got a few texts in there along the way, catching some strays, that Ethan Gregorcich put up numbers that would have won him the President's Trophy, you know, as the stand-up defensive player of the year, let alone being the, you know, National Rookie of the Year. I think that a lot of stock should have been put into the fact that he was an 18-year-old. Like, it's one thing to be a Rookie of the Year, but it's another to do it, you know, fresh out of high school. And he was able to do that last season. You know, obviously you guys know, and your listeners know, like I was pumping this kid's tires before he showed up on campus. You know, I watched him play offensive football in 2022 and was like, this kid's going to be a stud in the OUA immediately. And then I kind of hyped him up pretty good on this podcast. And I, you know, had to walk in early in the season and go, he better turn out to be a good player because he looked really, really bad. And then, you know, a couple weeks left in the season or late in the season, you know, there was a comment thrown my way that good thing he played up to the hype. And you know what? He did. He can control what he can control. I think It's funny, if you look at this from like statistics, I haven't really dove into Laurier's film from last year, but if you look at the way the statistics match up between him and Ife Onyemenum, from the start of the year to the end of the year, Ethan started so strong and then kind of fizzled out towards the end of the season. From a statistical standpoint, Ife started a little bit slow, and then as the year got on, he got better and better and better. And I think it's a pretty lazy narrative for me to sit here and say it's because Ife's an older 50-year player drafted into the CFL. He just gets better as the season goes on. He's veteran. All of those things are correct. I think when teams looked at the Laurier defense at the start of the year, we're going to take away Ife, and then we're going to run the ball at Ethan. We're going to throw the ball at Ethan. And then through the first four games of the season, they went, we can't do that either. So what are we going to do? And then all of a sudden, they started to try and run wide and run outside run schemes. Oh, Jahari Hastings is there, who nobody had heard of coming into the season because he was a transfer from Simon Fraser. Like, I had been told by an offensive staff member at a very good school in the OUA, when they watched the film, as good as Ife is, as good as Ethan was in his rookie season, they watched the film and said, the guy who's going to destroy us is 25. And Jahari Hastings has that ability to be a game wrecker on the back end for Laurier. So, you know, it really left teams no options. The defense was just so good. And we saw that throughout the entire course of the season. But Ethan can control what he can control. I think there was a lot of things down the stretch of the year that he's going to reevaluate with the coaching staff and say, I can get better at this when teams change up their schemes and they play me a little bit different to make him a better player going forward. But I think teams started to key on him and they said, this guy might be just as good as Ife is, so we're not going to let him beat us. So that's how I saw it. Again, I haven't dove into the film a ton, but I don't think that it's a coincidence that those two guys kind of passed each other mid-season as teams got more and more film on Ethan.
Well, you and I were talking about it after the very first game of the season here, and we're taking a look at Queens and how they're, you know, how the offense is kind of going there. And we're watching Ethan Gorsuch, and he finishes with four tackles in that game, but he's making rookie mistakes. He's going into gaps. He's being really antsy about things. Like, he's making first year player mistakes. So it makes total sense that you would still have that same kind of game plan going into Carlton. And then in the Carlton game, he finishes with 8.5 total tackles, a forced fumble, and an interception. And you're looking around going, this kid's a first year. And so it's not that he's playing completely sound by any means, but his athleticism, his motor that he has is so unbelievable as a first year kid that if you give him the time to really understand the game, understand the flow, and really get a feel for OUA offenses in general, man, the sky is the ceiling for this kid. And yeah, just to make sure that I'm also putting it out there, Ethan Gorsuch's numbers were comparable to the President's Award winner. So the fact that he doesn't win U Sports Rookie of the Year is absolutely insane. And I will fight anybody who wants to argue me on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think to me and to a lot of people who were around the program and to a lot of people in the OUA, it wasn't even an argument. Now it is, you know, apples to oranges when you go conference to conference. I just think if you remove Ethan from that defense, it's a lot different than a guy who plays for Laval, right? Like, it is apples to oranges, but at the same time, I think that we can all agree that it is a lot different when you remove him compared to anybody else. But that being said, I totally agree with you. I was at the Queens game and I wasn't calling it, so I had an opportunity first game of the year to really watch it a little bit closer. And I think you're right. Like, he did make a lot of rookie mistakes. There was twice. It happened twice in the game, and I didn't see it the rest of the year, where third and short, and he tried to jump over the line, and they just went right at him and put, like, they picked up the first down. Queens went under center, picked up the first down. And, you know, I brought it up to the coaching staff, and they said, yeah, it's something we got to clean up, because in high school that might work when you're playing at Holy Trinity in a three-team conference in Lhasa. It's not going to work in the OUA. And I think for Ethan, from what I saw at the beginning of the year, physically he could play on the field in the OUA. It was the thinking through the game, all the different calls, everything that he needed to know to be an effective player on the field took a little bit longer for him to figure it out. But once he did and got the confidence of, I'm 6'3", 230, I'm the fastest guy on the field, and I can make any play on the ball that's thrown in my vicinity, I think that's when you really saw him step up. So I think the Queens game was a big learning game. He was an effective player, but he learned on the fly. And then you turn into week two, week three, week four, and all of a sudden he's just picking up steam. Like, we were sitting there fourth game of the year, and we're like, the rookie of the year is over. Like, there's, like, he could do nothing the rest of the season. Like, somebody's got to come out of the woodwork and do something crazy here to take it away from him. So yeah, it was a treat to watch him this year. I can't wait to watch him go. Like, if this is year one, you know, unfortunately, we're probably only going to have three more years with him because, you know, a guy like that, you don't expect to see back for a fifth year. At the same time, you know, just appreciate while he's there. And, you know, if that's the best season that he ever has as a Laurier Golden Hawk, it was a phenomenal season. And I'm really impressed with what I saw from him. I think the sky's the limit. I think he has a work ethic and an attitude that kind of fits the mold of getting better as the years go on. But at the same time, I think we can just marvel and embrace the treat that he was to watch this season.
Well, first of all, to Tom, your days of fighting Laval Rougier, folks, are long behind you once those jerseys got hung up behind you. So, you know.
Hey, listen, if a couple of Rougier fans want to get after it, I'll get down to a 3-point stance. We'll go for it.
You're on your own on that one, I think. My days doing that are over, Tom. You're on your own.
As if your knees can let you get in a 3-point stance, Tom. But Jack, you hit the nail on the head off the gate going back to that pod about Ethan and so many other things that you were calling. I mean, the fact that you were going position by position, that you were saying a top three player essentially across the league. And maybe with one minor exception, we can talk about a hiccup, but you were spot on. The Elgar's my MVP. We're going to talk about Dawson Hodge. We're going to get to a little bit. That's what we're going to get to. Talk about Dawson Hodge in a little bit. I don't want to get there just now. But
I want you to say it a little bit louder because he's the best kicker in the country and he's going to dominate this year. And I'm going to pull this clip back and shove it in your face. So I just want you to know.
Oh, okay. So yeah, like Dawson Hodge wasn't kicking nearly as well as we had seen him the year prior, right? And accolades, what they were and what we expected, I think he fell short of what we thought. But we can dive into that a little bit more. Because what I wanted to ask is, you were spot on with the way this team was going to perform this year, coming just so short of the mark with falling short in the Yates to Western. But so what was the thing then? Something must have surprised you this year. Like, you were probably sitting back all year long being like, yep, called it. Yep, called it. Yep, called it. There had to be something that jumped out to you of being like, I didn't, like, obviously with what Ethan did, like actually seeing that come to fruition, watching that run that Elgersma went on, and we'll talk about that for sure, probably wasn't exactly what you thought was going to happen because it was so spectacular. But what was the one thing you would turn to where you're like, yeah, that I did not see coming?
Honestly, like, I can sit here and, you know, again, to pump my own tires from the preseason pod, like, I felt like I had this pegged pretty well, and anything short of what the expectation was and what I said back in August was a disappointment, because I know the coaching staff pretty well. I know these players pretty well from having seen them play enough that honestly, like, nothing surprised me this year, you know, again, aside from maybe Dawson, and that was it. Other than that, like, I don't think we can turn to anything and say, you know, I didn't expect to see that. Like, everybody kind of played the way they were supposed to play. Like, there was no – I think what was most impressive for me was, yes, they had the ability to win games by a lot, and, like, CC the quarterfinal win against Waterloo 69-0 and blowing teams out. But it was the ability to play in tight games. And, you know, that's really a sign of a good team, is when you can play in and win those tight games that don't necessarily go your way. And it started with a win at Queens, the Carlton game, because I know you guys, after 2 weeks, were sitting here saying, what's wrong? Laurier's 2-0, but they're not good. You know, they're not playing good football. They're not, you know, they're 2-0, but you know, I hold on. They're the worst 2-0 team I've ever seen.
Hey, Taylor Ogersma doesn't score a passing touchdown until he gets to a Guelph defense that it's like shredded cheese. So.
Tom, were we 2-0 or were we 2-0?
I'm just saying.
Did we go to a Yates Cup final or did we go to a Yates Cup final?
Ah.
You know, so you know, I think there is something to be said about teams being good enough when things go wrong, you know, your quarterback doesn't throw a touchdown pass in the first two games of the season and then proceeds to finish second by like one passing touchdown on the year and also lead the league in total touchdowns because he's the best quarterback in the country. So you know what? And he did it with those two games at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I think the ability to win those tight games sometimes over the past decade plus haven't been the MO of this team. It's either win in blowouts or get heartbroken in the tight games. Mm-hmm. So the ability to pull out those games in the regular season where it's not going as well as you hoped it would, but you're still finding ways to be victorious and win games and go 7-1 in the regular season. And, you know, earn that spot to host Windsor in the semifinal game, right? Like that whole season doesn't happen, right? Like obviously they had a big showing against Windsor in the regular season, but then to come down to that game and then be able to host that semifinal, I don't know if they win the game as it was played. Like if you just take that game, pick it up, put it in Windsor, I don't know if it finishes the same way. I think the home field advantage really played a difference in that specific game, and that's why you play the whole season doing that. So the ability to win those tight games, I think, for me, was the most impressive thing. And out of the blue, I honestly thought they were going to dominate everybody, run through everyone, and then play a tight game against Western in the regular season and then in the playoffs. Like, that's how I saw the season going. But they had some tight games in there, and they were able to pull out the victory every single time except the two games against Western.
Yeah, most definitely. And even, like, while, yes, I'm on the edge of my seat in that semifinal game against Windsor for sure, there is a part of me that is thinking – Laurier's done this before. They came out with a one-point victory against Queens. They came out against a very good Carleton team and won that game and willed their way to win. And when you have that faith and that confidence to go into a game like that, where it's a tight game, it's a tough game, that can make all the difference in the world, so that when you're down to the fourth quarter with 3 minutes left and you're down by a score, maybe you're just up by a couple scores or something like that, and you're just calm, cool, and collected because you can say, we've done this before. That is such a massive advantage to have going into any game, really. And I think that's, you nailed it on the head with that. But we talked about it a little bit, kind of going back and forth and certainly tongue in cheek there. But I really just wanted to highlight, as we were talking about Ethan Groschutz on the defensive side, Taylor Elgersma had one of the most impressive seasons I think I've ever seen. And something that I want to make sure I'm calling out here, because you can look at the stats and you can say, yeah, you're right, that is really impressive. He is some of the top, whatever. He doesn't score a touchdown pass until the third game of the season against Guelph. And unlike all of the other quarterbacks, he doesn't play against Toronto or York. Now, Toronto had a pretty good pass defense, and I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but historically speaking, the Toronto teams are certainly struggling, and most definitely that team in red last year struggled a whole ton. So to have 18 touchdown passes without playing against a York team where you could easily have 5 or 6 in the first half, I think spells that out even more so. And there's been a lot of times over the years where, you know, you look at an OUA MVP and it's kind of maybe up in the air or whatever else. There is no discussion in this particular time. Taylor Elgersma did a hell of a job this year, and really just, like you said, not getting hung up into one particular item. Like, he's not coming out of Queens or Carleton being like, I didn't have a touchdown pass, what the hell is wrong with me, whatever. He really seems like the guy that has the mentality of whatever's going to get the job done at the end of the day, as long as we come away with a dub. If I have to throw 6 touchdown passes, hell yeah. But if I have to just sneak in one and just hand it off to my backs, whatever gets the job done. And you and I have already talked about this. I love Elgersma. I haven't had the chance to talk to him all that much one-on-one, but I love this dude. He's a gamer, and he's exactly the kind of guy that I would love to block for if I was an offensive lineman. So just talk about Elgersma in this past season.
Yeah, I mean, like the kid's a phenom, right? Like he's 6'6", he weighs 230 pounds, 225 pounds. He can run, he can throw. Like I told you guys at the beginning of the year, like the comp that I gave was Josh Allen, right?
Yep.
Because like he's big, he's physical, he can run, he's got a cannon of an arm, but he just has that like almost at times where it seems a little bit too lackadaisical, but it's just that calming presence of like, yeah, you know, like we're just going to roll with the punches. We're going to get through this. And he has that confidence in himself and the team to pick up wins. And, you know, when you have the weapons that he has, who wouldn't have the confidence to be able to do it? but yeah, like I think you're absolutely right on the, you know, I think I made that point to you via text on Toronto and York that Laurier didn't play. Like those were the two teams that Laurier missed. Those two teams finished 11th and 9th in the OUA standings this year, and Laurier went 7-1. Right. So if you really want to talk about who the strongest teams were, like they beat Windsor twice. There was no, like it was a 3-horse race in the OUA this year. They beat Windsor twice. They lost to Western twice. They were the second best team in the conference. There's no question about it. But again, like there is that conversation, and it went back to the MVP. My argument was you're saying that this is a most valuable player award. So you have to give it to the player who gives the most value to their team. Evan Hillock had a phenomenal season, and he did a lot of great things for Western. I think a little bit of history goes against him because Western has churned out top-level quarterbacks year after year, especially in the last, you know, since Will Finch, you know, they really haven't missed when it comes to picking their next guy who's an extended starter. So for Hillock, it's, you know, he's just another one of the guys. If you remove Elgersma from that Laurier team, they're not the second-best team in the conference, right? They're not. You know, they might be 4-4. They might be 3-5 without him. Like, he is such a big difference maker. And it is crazy to see what he's able to do. Now, like, you have to take the good with the bad. I think Laurier were one of the most sacked teams in the OUA this year. They took a lot of sacks, and not all of that's on the offensive line. You know, Taylor is so good at improvising and creating on the fly. Sometimes it ends up being a detriment. But the positives outweigh the negatives with him. So you have to take those plays when you take him scoring all the time, when you take his big bombs, when you take him running it in, when you take him coming back in the semifinal and leading a win against Windsor, and him faking like he's going to rush, like every defender runs up on him, and he just flips it to Quinton Scott in the back of the end zone to tie the game with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So you have to take those moments when you take the big moments with Taylor as well. And I don't think there was anybody even close. There was nobody in his vicinity, like nobody in his universe in terms of value to their team in the entire conference this year. And it was a pleasure to watch firsthand. But I went down to the field after calling the Laurier Carlton game, and I saw Taylor, and I, you know, said what's up to him, told him good job. And the first thing he said to me without, hey, how you doing, was need to be better. Quick, need to be better. That's all he said. So the next week, you know, and a little bit of behind the scenes, Laurier's press box is a built-up deck right now because there's no stands at the stadium. They're having the turf pulled out as we speak. But it's a built-up deck, and my spot is essentially right beside the visiting coach's box. And there's no, you know, pipe and drape. There's no wall in between us. It's literally me, my color commentator, Jason, and then, you know, Waterloo coaches. And I said that on air. I said, when I saw Taylor Elgersma last week after the game, before he said anything else to me, the first thing he said, I need to be better. Need to be better. I need to be better. And the Waterloo coaches, you know, kind of shaking their head a little bit. Oh, you know, he wins. They're 2-0, and he's thinking like that. And then he just, from the 6 games on, proceeds to be the best player in the country. And it's, again, not close. I know Jonathan Senecal, phenomenal football player, but I'm always going to go to bat for Taylor. He's my quarterback. And he was, you know, he was the difference maker this season on where this team is. Now, yes, he has phenomenal weapons. He has unbelievable receivers, great rushing attack, great coaching staff from the head coach to the coordinators to the positional coaches to the defensive side of the ball. But Laurier isn't 7-1, second best team in the country, back in the Yates Cup for the first time in 6 years without him.
No doubt. And you know what? I almost want to leave talking about those weapons to Tom, because I know how excited Tom was, like, going off about, you know, that dynamic duo. And I know it goes beyond, you know, Raiden Thorne, Ethan Jordan, and all the other weapons that he has. So let me take it into one other direction, then we can perhaps circle back, which is, you know, as fun as this talking OUA football on any level, Laurier Golden Hawks, especially having you on in early March, what is fun about this time of year is that obviously, we're right on the precipice of combine season. And it's instructive not only to see, you know, and I think I have the names right as far as the national invites. We're seeing Luke Brubaker, Hamilton Cooper, Brandon Manua, and then for the regional, Ayo Ajayi and Tanner Nelms. And it's instructive not only seeing that talent, but as well kind of looking through this roster, thinking about how close they were to the pinnacle, being, you know, the proverbial, you know, inch or two here or there from achieving that goal that you set out, that anything but is a disappointment, or however exactly you would frame that. That when you add in maybe just another guy like Ife as a fifth-year player who was drafted last year, this is a team where, depending on what happens come May, based on the combine results with the draft coming back, where you seemingly have so much of this returning talent that we've barely even scratched the surface talking about returning with that coaching staff, with that experience, with that chip on the shoulder that is, you know, beyond, you know, comprehension. And just from that standpoint, you know, you have to imagine that this team, and I'm curious to what extent you've been able to have in contact with the fellas, and as a little programming note, and to Tom's joy, as far as not being able to talk with Elgersma too much, we might have Sir Elgersma on the pod in the not too distant future, actually. But this team must be just firing on like a no hold bar. Like, we must be, I don't even know, like, what is the vibe right now with this team, knowing how good they were and yet how much better they could be just with the experience returning?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is that, like, of the guys returning, there is that sense of unfinished business, because it really felt like, and, like, you know, as a supporter of the program, somebody who watches almost every game, gets to see, you know, the home games up close and personal, and gets to be a small part of them, from the broadcast perspective, it really felt different this year. Like, there was no fear going in. Like, most years, you know, going into the playoffs, like, I don't know about this matchup. 2017, like, we knew the Yates Cup was going to be tough, but we were, you know, the reigning champs, and it was like, okay, we got a good shot here, and it was good up until, you know, halftime Western started to pull away, and then, you know, Western pulled away a lot in the second half, and really, you know, whooped us in half number two in 2017. But going into the Yates Cup this year, it was like, we kind of feel like we're in the spot that we want to be, because, you know, we had a good showing against them in the regular season. And, you know, the regular season game, it was like we had one good quarter and we almost pulled out the win. Like, we had the lead in the fourth quarter at one point, and it was almost a win, but we played one good quarter of football and that was it. That kind of happened in the Yates Cup, but the good quarter happened in the second quarter instead of the third. But I don't think there was, you know, matchup-wise, there was no fear. It was just like the team was ready to go. And I think there's a lot of guys who are coming back who feel this, like, we had a really good shot and we might never get it again, because that does start to sink in. Because, you know, like, I was a second year guy in 2016, and all the other second year guys who were there, like, they played in a Yates Cup in third year and then missed the playoffs in fourth and fifth. Right, guys left. Curly Gittens Jr. left after 4 years. Right, so you never quite have the same team. So yes, there's excitement for the guys coming back, and there's unfinished business. There's a lot of big pieces that are going to be leaving here, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, the big question marks coming into next year for Laurier are going to be Cooper Hamilton, the left tackle. Is he coming back, or is he going to stick in the CFL? And then, of course, Luke Brubaker. Those are really the only two guys where there are question marks on their return. So they're both going to the National Combine. So is Brandon Omanua. Ayo Ajayi and Tanner Nelms going to the regional combine, both fifth-year seniors, same with Brandon. So they can't come back anyway. But for everybody else, like, those two pieces are big. Ife's going to graduate. There's more guys in the defensive secondary who are leaving just with eligibility moving on. So, you know, it's not going to be the exact same team. I think this offense is going to be – like, you're going to see the list of guys coming back from the offense and be like, this isn't – like, if Cooper Hamilton comes back, you pretty much return the entire offense. Like, it's ridiculous. You know, Tanner Nelms is going to move on, but you have Quentin Scott coming back. You have Raiden Thorne coming back. You have Ethan Jordan, Laomi Ojatalayo. Like, your whole weaponry is restocked and returning. Jackson Stebbings and Jace Atkinson, you know, guys who really emerged as good complementary pieces in the passing game this year. You know, you had an 18-year-old starting center. He turned 18 on August 23rd or something like that, like right before the season started. You know, so, and, you know, things really started to calm down when he moved into the starting center role. So shout out Cody too, because he was phenomenal this year. You return Dawson, you return Jason McGugan on the special teams. So, you know, I think there are a lot of big pieces returning offensively, special teams wise. I think the questions are going to turn to the defense on who can step up and take those spots that are going to be left by the guys moving on. So I think the first 2-3 weeks of the year are going to be, okay, what do we got here? Because we have an offense that is going to be national championship level. I have all the faith in the world in Ron Van Moerkirk that he's going to put together a national championship caliber defense, but you have 8 games to figure it out in the regular season. And it, like you guys know, it's not a long time to put it all together if you want to go on a run. So that's going to be interesting. There is a lot of excitement there, but I think it all stems from, like, we had a really good opportunity this year and we didn't get it done. Like, all the cards lined up, right? Like, Western became the first team to three-peat in 21 years. you know, all this stuff that kind of fell into place, it was, why not us? Why isn't this going to be our year? And it just fell apart at the last minute. And, you know, that it happens sometimes. It's football. You play games, you win, you lose, and you got to move on. But it's a short season, and you got to live with the result. So I think for the guys who are coming back, they don't want that feeling again, because there's going to be a bunch of them who, this is, like, even though it's their fourth year, it's going to be their last year.
Yeah, most definitely. And, like, I think we really saw that as well. I mean, there's a reason why Zach and I both went back to back on picking Laurier to win against Western in the end of the regular season and into the Yates Cup, because we saw the same thing. I think this was one of the best opportunities that I had seen from a competitor team to overtake Western in a few years now. And so that's really why we were so bullish on them. And obviously we loved watching them this entire past season. And when you really look at the growth, even from 22 to 23, 22, they finished 5-3. The three losses are to Western, Ottawa, and Queens. And then you come back into this one and they start off against a fully healthy Queens team that turned into the monster that they were at the end of the season here, but they had all of their pieces in place and they still pulled out the victory, and the defense looked unbelievable. Now, first week of the season, offenses always take a little bit of extra time, sure, but that defense was phenomenal. And I think when we start looking at the certain players in there, like you already beautifully detailed, we've talked about it before with Zach's Ottawa Gigi's. When we're talking about guys like James Peter or Max Carbonell, those are some guys that could be completely change the face of a defense, because if you don't have a certain caliber of player in a certain position, you might have to account for it in another way if you can't backfill that. I feel that Onyemenenim is in that same conversation, that while his stats may not blow off the page, the savvy that he had as that middle linebacker, and you can really watch it when you know what you're looking for here, when you watch him play and you see him read the defense and then just go, and you see him take off and cut through an offensive lineman who's trying to take his head off and make a tackle in the backfield, or he's making a sure-handed tackle against some of the best skill players in the OUA in the open field, and you start looking like, okay, that was pretty impressive. It might have been just a 6-yard gain and maybe on paper looks just standard, but I think that's certainly going to be one of the biggest things that Laurie has to look for. And like you said, Ron Van Moerkirk is a phenomenal defensive coordinator. I have total confidence that he'll be able to get that defense back to running. But when, like, when you look over at the offensive side of the ball, like you said, Quinton Scott back, Taylor Elgersma back, Ethan Jordan, Raiden Thor, Laomi Oluwatolayo, just in the skill players alone, your jaw's kind of dropping here. And I know I said this earlier here, and I'm going to say it again just for, you know, I'm not backing off. Raiden Thorne has arguably the best hands I've ever seen on a wide receiver, certainly in this year. With some of the catches that he was making so nonchalantly, it was absolutely unbelievable to watch him. And then you look over at Ethan Jordan, and one of the most consistent targets that you could possibly have. You just throw it in anywhere within a 3-foot range of the guy, and he seems to come down with it. So to see those guys go back and forth, and then Oluwatolayo as soon as you start sleeping on one of them, and then a Tanner Nelms or a Quinton Scott out of the backfield as soon as you got everybody else covered up. Like, it really seemed like when this offense was rolling, nobody could stop them. But I do worry about that defense and just replacing a guy like Onyemenenum.
Yeah, I mean, like, you don't have another Ife on the roster. And,
no.
And I think you nailed that. You know, when I saw his film the first time, I remember we did like Take Flight events. So we introduced all the new recruits and it was on OUA TV. And so Dan Polischuk hosted it. And he talked to, you know, Dwayne Cameron, who was the recruiting coordinator at the time. He talked to Michael Folds, who's the head coach. And then I got to interview all, like, the big key name recruits who were coming in. So Brandon Omanua was a part of that. Ife Onyemenum was a part of that. And I got to talk to a couple of older players at the time, Nakis Onyeka, coming through, Brandon Calver, both Grey Cup champions, and then Ron Van Morkirk, the defensive coordinator, and getting to talk to the guys. And I remember sitting there on the day of the Take Flight event, and I was prepping my notes, and I was like, okay, I got to watch a little bit on some of these guys. And I pulled up Ife's high school tape, and I just – sat there and went, well, that's Nakis Onyeka, but 6 years younger. And that's kind of what he turned into at the end of his career, right? Like, he just had that, like, natural ability to find the note, like, find the football. And, you know, he was so, you know, he's so cerebral when he played. He just knew where the ball was going. He could get to the ball, and then he could out-physical you to get to the ball and make the play. So, yeah, you don't have another Ife on the roster. You know, who's going to fill that gap? You don't know. Having Ethan play as well as he did, I think, puts you at ease a little bit more. But then I think there's going to be a hungry competition through spring camp coming up and then into the summer workouts and then, you know, down the line into training camp. Like, there's going to be a lot of guys who see the opportunity to play, you know, and I've been told a number of times from this staff, like, the two best play. That's how we do it. Two best linebackers play. We don't care how old they are. We don't care what their experience is. If you're the best, you're going to play. And so you just have to be, you know, right now the second best, and you get a starting spot on the field, but then you got to go out there and prove it. And I think the leash is going to be a little bit shorter for that new starter than it was on Ife. But yeah, I think that question mark does, it, like I said, it does go to the defense. You look, especially on the back end, like Malik Cote was a fourth year. He could come back, but you don't know with guys in fourth year, like, what their decision makings are. I haven't talked to Malik about what he wants to do. Nico McCarthy will be done. And then you have Ethan Bayfield, who stepped up really, really nice when Ayo Ajayi went out with his injury at the end of the season. So you're pretty confident in him. Tristan Miller was also phenomenal on the back end for the Golden Hawks this year when he got into games. But when you have to be that consistent guy, that's when it takes the turn. So can those guys be the difference maker on the back end? But those are guys I look at to fill in the gaps. Chris Haggart as well. More than likely moving on from the team. So, you know, it really is the defensive secondary is going to be where these question marks come from. But, you know, this is a team where the MO has always been defense wins, can offense finish it off? And so, you know, I don't think that that's going to change. But next year, when you start the season, everybody's going to be looking at how shiny the offense is. They're going to be able to put up points. Can the defense get stops to win games? And that's going to be, you know, as we sit here right now, that's going to be the question mark, which is kind of new territory for this team. They've never really been in that situation because the defense has been so consistent over Ron Van Morkirk's tenure here.
And when the defense is as good as they were last year, a drop off, all things considered, and in respect to how, or in relative to how dominant this offense was and looks to be again, in the grand scheme of things, won't be that, or might not be that detrimental. And there's always that piece on when this offense produces as much as they likely will again. And yes, you highlight those names in the secondary that might take a step down as a result of, teams are probably going to pass the ball more. So we might get to the end of next year and be like, it looks like Laurier got lit up in their passing defense, but it might more than anything be a product of the amount teams threw on them. But
No, I was just going to say teams graduate seniors every year, right? Like, this isn't new. It's not like, you know, we're reinventing the wheel with this. It is difficult when, like you said, when you have such a stellar defense and then your offense is just a year or two behind them. So they just didn't match up at the right time. Like, could you imagine, like, and this is where my mind goes to. This year's defense, 2023 defense, with what this 2024 offense is projected to be, that's a Vanier Cup winning formula. And that's, I think, where my mind goes to, where the question marks raise. And it's just because the expectations are still here. Like, it's not going anywhere. It's not like everybody's leaving. It's a couple key pieces, important pieces to this team. But I do have the faith in the coaching staff and the recruiting team that they got the players in there and those guys in the room who are going to be working their tails off for starting spots, because these spots are going to become available. And like I said, the leash is going to be short. The best two linebackers play. The six best DBs are going to play. The four best defensive linemen are going to play. So you get your opportunity. You make the most of it. You're going to stay on the field. And I think that's how they have to look at it going into the season. But it does kind of dangle the carrot above the treadmill for them to run at this in the offseason and get as best as they can be. Because if they're not ready for camp, you're not going to play.
And no doubt, and it's the frustration for programs across the league that just, you know, it's the nature of youth sport of college football. But you know, you were saying about that idea of closing games, whether that's been more on the offense historically, whether it's going to turn more onto the defense. But when you look at that matchup against Western in the regular season, a 3-point game, and I know that's not how it broke down, but just thinking about that point difference and. Yeah, going back to, or if we can now bring up a bit of the year Dawson Hodge had, where he goes 10 of 18, and I'll grant that he misses three against Queens, and Queens is probably one of the tougher stadiums to kick field goals in with the amount of just wind that's shooting all across the field. We've seen the talent. We've seen the accolades. It's not a question of, I don't think you just lose that. You're obviously close to the team, the special teams units that much more so with, you know, your love for all things long snappers. The ball doesn't magically just get into the holder's hands, trademark Jack Moore Industries. Like, is there anything, is it just a blip? Is there anything we need to be reading into that? Because, you know, me and Tom went down rabbit holes of just like, how does this influence, you know, the play calling decisions? Is this going to be a thing where now all of a sudden the field goal distance is all these things? Like, are we the kind of something, nothing, or whatever type of scale to the year Dawson Hodge, or should we just expect he's back to what we've seen and expect from him?
I don't think too many other kickers in the country would have gotten the leash that he got this year, and he earned it, you know? And I think that's my whole mindset on it, is he earned the opportunity to go out there and miss those kicks, right? Because you're right. At some point, most teams throughout the course of the year would have changed their game plan. They would have done something different. But there, I don't think, and I don't know this for sure, like I'm not on the sidelines during the games, but to me, there was never a point in the year of all the games that I saw where they weren't 100% confident sending Dawson onto the field. Now, whether he makes the kick or he doesn't, again, it's football, it happens. But you got to remember what he did in his first 2 years to earn the ability to miss those kicks and to miss a few this year, right? Like, it's not like he was, you know, 82% and he missed some, but he was good on most of them. I think he was 56% on the season. You know, a lot of teams start looking at the other options at that point, not this team. You know, I think Dawson didn't have the year that he wanted to have. But I think there's all the faith in the world that he's going to turn it around this offseason. Like, whatever it was that ailed him, you know, I think that he can come back next year and prove that he is the best kicker in the country, you know? And I still have that mindset of him. I see the ball come off his foot. I see his mechanics. Everything seems sound to me. It doesn't seem like he's, you know, if whether it's a mental thing, whether it's, you know, you know, we can all agree that the turf, the old turf that's getting torn up at Laurier was never the best. So, you know, whatever it was, if he wasn't, you know, there was a new holder this year, you know, whatever that might be. I think for Dawson, it's easily correctable. He's going to go with Darcy Sagan, the kicking coach, work with Ronnie Pfeffer, who came on as an advisor this year, to work with the kickers as well. He's got a great rapport with Jason McGugan, who's the long snapper, and they're going to figure this out. So I have no worries about it from Dawson Hodge's perspective. I think he's earned the ability to come back next year and be the starting kicker and go out there and be 90% on field goals and average 47 yards a punt and be a first team all Canadian on both spots. So I'm not concerned about it. I don't look at this season and be like, oh, if we just had a kicker, you know, it's not even close to what this team was looking at. Like, he didn't cost them any games. You know, it did change the makeup of games, you know, the timing of his kicks. Teams miss kicks too, like other teams. You know, you look at Queens, I think they had a 37-yarder to win it in week number one. And, you know, shout out to Ethan Bayfield, who ran it out of the end zone, and Laurier gets the win 11-10. So, you know, at the same time, like, yeah, Dawson struggled a little bit this year. I think for me, it's a non-issue going into next season. I think, you know, there's still going to be that confidence in him. He's going to make every kick when he trots out onto the field. And again, like, it's kind of the Taylor Algersma effect at quarterback. You know, third down, third and goal, you're down by 7, 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Who would you rather have in the conference as your quarterback to go out, run that play, and score a touchdown? And to me, it was Taylor Algersma. You line up all the kickers in the OUA, and you say you have to make a 45-yard kick to win a Yates Cup. Who are you picking? Every time, 10 out of 10, I'm picking Dawson Hodge.
Yeah, and I think, once again, it's very similar to how you worded it in that he earned the opportunity to potentially go out and miss those field goals. I think we've started looking at him and started having – an all-Canadian is kind of where his expectation is.
Well, and
so when you fall
thing,
short
right?
of that.
You have guys who, you know, there are guys where the rules are different, right? The floor is different, right? His floor is anything below 85% is bad. Anything punting below 44 yards on average is bad because that's where he set the expectation for you to think of him. So he has a season like he did, and everybody's like, what's wrong with Dawson Hodge? I don't know if it's wrong. It's just going to balance out the career averages, right? Like, he's just not going to be the best kicker from the day he stepped onto the field to the day he's going to leave after year five. Third year was a little bit more difficult, but it also makes the return story in years four and five that much better. And that makes my job so much better. So, you know, I totally agree. He set the expectation on a different level than any other player in his position in the conference, in the country. The expectations are higher for him than anybody else.
Most definitely. Switching gears a little bit here, because I do want to talk about the 2023 season a little bit more in depth. Obviously, we talked about the first couple of games with Queens and with Carleton. The offense kind of has their struggles there, but more than anything, the team mentality comes into play, the defense comes into play, and you squeak out those wins against two very good teams, I might add. When you start to look at the rest of the season here, and obviously Taylor Algersma going off with a historic game against the Guelph Griffins here, going for 6 touchdown passes and getting the monkey off his back in the biggest way possible about not scoring a passing touchdown here, is certainly incredible. Don't get me wrong. But when you look at some of the other games here, specifically the Ottawa game and the Windsor game, those are two of the most impressive wins I think I've seen in a back-to-back setting here. For me in particular, the most impressive win that I think I saw the entire season was that Laurier against Windsor game in the regular season. I have never seen that Windsor team get so shut out so completely, where that Windsor defense is one of, statistically, one of the best defenses, not in the OUA, but in the entirety of U Sports. And Laurier hangs 438 yards of offense and 40 points on them. Like, I watched that game with my jaw open from the first get-go, and it's 26-0 at halftime. That's certainly my pick here. From the rest of the regular season and the games that we haven't really spoken to, what are some of your real call-up moments? Is there one game in particular where you had that same feeling of, holy shit, this team looks good?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of earmarked that at the start of the year, where you're going to have a tough game against Queens week one, and whatever your record is coming out of that game is going to be your record. But then you have to look at the next four games, and I think just looking at it here, yeah, the next four before the bye. So they had five games, bye, and then three games after that. The next four games were like must wins. They were like, you kind of checked that box at the start of the year. Like, okay, you should be better than Carleton. They won, but not as impressive as everybody thought that they were going to be. I thought, you know, Lefebvre was phenomenal in that game. You know, I had a quick conversation with him when I went down to the field afterwards, and I just kind of said to him, like, hey man, you played awesome. Keep your head up, keep going. 'Cause you know, the world's kind of your oyster here. You keep playing like that, you're going to win more football games than you're going to lose. So I thought, again, like, winning that close game was good. The Guelph game was like, again, you know, I know you guys, I made fun of you guys for saying it, but there were question marks going into that Guelph game. Like, uh-oh, what's going to happen here? Like, you know, we have to, at some point, play better than we've been playing. And I was on the golf course, and I had the game up on my phone. Shout out to Rogers TV 20 out that way in Guelph for doing the game. And I had the game up on my phone, and I was watching it. I was like, oh, he just scored again. Like, I was playing with my brother-in-law. I was like, they just scored again. Elgersma again. Like, I just couldn't believe it. It was so much. And then, you know, beating Waterloo the way that they did, I think they were up like 24-0 after the first quarter, or like first possession of the second quarter. And then, you know, kind of in the garbage time, the score kind of balanced out. The dominant win over McMaster, and I think it, like, as the game went on, they got better and better and better, came away with that one. I think the Ottawa game for me was like, you don't really know what to expect. It's a long bus ride. I know they went up the day before and they stayed after the game. So, and you were a little bit worried about the travel because they had Windsor at home the next week. So to pull away that 8-point win on the road at TD Place was impressive. But I think you're right. Like, just the statement, because there was so much. There was such a big magnifying glass on that Windsor game, because Windsor was shooting up like nobody had ever expected. They had phenomenal performances. They were playing at a Yates Cup level. So the expectations were that Windsor team was going to give Laurier a real tough game. And the Golden Hawks, there was a punt return that got called back for Windsor. It was a 93-yard punt return that got called back. As soon as that happened, game changed. Like, Windsor shut down. Laurier took over. They took advantage before the half, and then coming out of the half, they were even more dominant. Like, you look at that Windsor team, and again, like, we pegged them in the top three by the end of the year. That Windsor team, Laurier outscores them on the season, in the playoffs and the regular season, 61-21, right? They're plus 40 against that team. How many other teams even got close to 30 points against Windsor this year? Like, I don't have their schedule in front of me, but nobody did that. And so I think that for me was the most impressive win. But I, again, like, it was kind of back to that Ottawa game where it's like, okay, they won another close game. Like, they're learning how to win tight football games. You need that going into week 9 against Western. They lose that one by 3, and then they end up losing the Yates Cup 29-14, which kind of got away in the fourth quarter. But, you know, I think for me that Windsor win in the regular season was the statement, and then to do it the complete to still win the game but do it the opposite way in the playoffs was like, okay, this team's for real. And I think that's what gave them and gave me confidence going into the Yates Cup, was that they had, you know, every reason to be confident that they're going to win, because how good they were and what they showed through the first however many games, that was 10 games through the regular season and playoffs. It's like, hey, they can win every way possible, and their only loss on the year, they lost by 3 to Western. So why can't they win this? So I think that for me was that statement win against Windsor. I think you're right. That's the one where it was like, okay, this team's for real.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be so interesting to just see, just holistically, we talk about the chip on the shoulder, returning players, the defense, all these different things. But then as well, where if this team caught anyone by surprise this year, and I don't know why they would have, they certainly aren't going to be going into this upcoming season. But Jack, the last thing I want to ask you about, and again, I want to turn the spotlight more onto you, because I think we've asked this to the two other lovely broadcasters in Adam McGuire and Brett Hedges we've had on. What is your favorite call you made this year covering Lori Goldenhawks football? And I guess, I mean, because I believe you did a couple of Waterloo games as well. So, yeah, no, let's, I'm going to keep it to Laurier football specifically. Best call you had all year long?
Oh, that's a tough one. I, you know, I'm pretty hard on myself, so I don't know if any of my calls are good. But
we have it on good authority that that's incorrect.
Yeah, correct.
You know, I think for me, like, one of the things when I was kind of reflecting after, you know, I was really lucky this year. I got to work with the CBC crew doing the national semi and the national championship. I was the spotter for Mark Lee, so I wasn't on air, but I was at both games. I was in Vancouver at the UBC CNFX game, and then I was in Kingston for the Vanier Cup. And so I got really lucky that I got to be a part of those. But like, when your on-air season is done, it's just so different, and you kind of, you know, regroup. And I made a post, and thanks to Kavo for taking photos of me, even though he's the Waterloo photographer this year. He was the Laurier photographer when I played at Laurier. So he's still taking photos of me, you know, so many years and, you know, so many pounds later. I think for me, like, one of the things that got brought up, Mike Hogan sent me a nice message on Twitter under the tweet of the photo that I put out. And he said, you know, crazy game, and you guys did a good job at navigating all the plays, you know, crazy plays, crazy calls, you know, and into the fourth quarter of that Laurier-Windsor semifinal. I think I was just most proud of how we navigated that, because that finish was so nuts. That, you know, the catch to tie the game with 14 seconds left, touchdown. But then you have to give them the moment it's due, because Windsor just, you know, they're an extra point away from tying the game and pretty much sending it to overtime in a game that got away from them. They were up 14-7 with 8 minutes to go, and all of a sudden they're down 21-14. So giving that moment it's due, but then, like, there's a flag on the play. We think we know what it is, you know, and, you know, this could be defensive holding. This could be offensive holding. This could be something that we didn't, like, this could be a late hit on the quarterback that the guy at the back decided to throw. Like, we don't know what this call is going to be. So I think I was most just proud of how we navigated that fourth quarter in the semifinal between Laurier and Windsor. We gave the moments their due. You know, we didn't overshine the moments. We let them play out. We gave them their due. We didn't make it about us. And then when that kind of big thing happened with 14 seconds left, I can still go back and enjoy kind of how we navigated it, because I thought we did the best job possible with the information we had. Like, we don't have replays. We don't have a monitor. We don't get slow-mo on the hand that's grabbing. In live time, I thought it was holding. I'll be honest. I'm seeing it through my purple and gold colored glasses as well. So, you know what? Like, I think that for me was kind of the best moment. And to call an OUA semifinal, it's only the second one I've done. You know, I did MAC against Guelph in 2019 on Cable 14. But that was the first Laurier semifinal I got to do. In, you know, what are we now? That's my sixth season doing Laurier football, whether that's color or play-by-play. That was the first semifinal I got to do. So I thought we did a good job. I thought that was probably our strongest game of the season, was that semifinal game and how we navigated it and what we did and what we put out there. So to finish on such a strong note at the end of the year, I think that was good. And then, you know, I thought personally, nobody hears it. Only one guy hears it, and he broadcasts it to 150,000, 200,000 people for the semi and the national championship. But I thought I was – personally, I thought I did really well in my spotter role for Mark Lee. You know, he obviously, like, calls the game beautifully. There's nobody better at calling football in this country right now than Mark. To be a little bit of a help to him and listen to him and Deshaun call the game and, you know, be able to kind of help him as little bit as I did, But make the calls as good as they were, because I can give him those little tidbits that he wasn't picking up on. I thought I did my job to the best of my ability in those two games, in Vancouver and in Kingston, for the semi and the final. So nobody would have heard that, but I was really proud of myself for how I did in those two broadcasts as well. But from an on-air perspective, that I think the whole game of that OUA semifinal between Windsor and Laurier was my best work of the year.
Well, listen, there's a reason why the relationship that you and I specifically have started off with me being a fan of you. I watch a ton of U Sports football, not just in the OUA, but across the country here. And you are by far one of the best people that I have the privilege of listening to. The passion that you have for the game comes through in spades, and your knowledge of the team, your knowledge of not just Laurier, but anybody else that they play against is really impressive. So I know you're a humble guy. I will do your bragging for you. You are fantastic at what you do, sir, and I hope that you get as many opportunities to call as many games as possible, because I love listening to you. I do have a question after this, but I wanted to make sure that I gave you the roses that you so rightly deserve.
No, I appreciate that. You know what? You guys do a great job for OUA football and U Sports football. Like, you're so committed to this, doing your podcast weekly and then throughout the season doing it twice a week. And, you know, it's a lot of work that people don't see behind the scenes. And, you know, I didn't get the opportunity to play as much university football as I wanted to when I went to school. So to still be a little bit a part of it is fun for me. I like seeing the passion, and I've gotten to see now a whole recruiting class. Like, I was there on their recruiting day showing up and saying, here are these players, this is the future of Laurier football, and I've now seen them graduate through 5-6 years in the program. So to be able to see that, and these guys turn from 18-19 year old high school kids into, you know, young men who are graduating and going out into the workforce, is pretty cool. And to still have a little bit of a connection to the team and program that I have a lot of passion for, I just love it. I love the sport, I love it, and I think it deserves the best coverage as possible, and that's what drives me to kind of call the best game possible when I'm behind the mic every time.
Well, you do a hell of a job, my friend. I will tell you that every time. I would be remiss if we did not dive into the Western losses a little bit more here.
Sure, now, listen, absolutely.
End of the season happens here, and they lose against Western at the very last game of the season. That's for their first place. And I have to be honest, I picked them twice, and I stand by those picks. Going into it, knowing what I know now, I'd still make those same picks because of what I saw. But in that regular season Western loss, when Evan Hillock goes out with an injury, and you don't have their star running back, who is the All-Canadian, and doing what he's doing, in my opinion, Western is at their most vulnerable in that regard. And Jerome Rancourt is still able to find a connection and get a touchdown there. They go into the Yates Cup, and obviously they have that very strong second quarter, like we talked about, coupled with a very strong third quarter in that regular season game, but just aren't able to get it done there. In your opinion, and I know you didn't have a chance to actually call these games, but you're an avid Laurier fan, you're an avid football fan, so I know you watch them. How far... I don't want to word it that way, because I think they're right there. What is the extra piece that this Laurier team needs to finally get over the hump of the Western Ponies? We saw the jump to take over Ottawa and Queens last year and do it in a decisive fashion in this past year. What is that next step to you? Where is the opportunity? How do they need to get better in order to finally put the Western Ponies away? Because those Western Mustangs are directly responsible for Laurier not having a Yates Cup victory. So what is it in your opinion?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think, you know, Western's a phenomenal program, as much as we don't want to admit it. You know, like all three of us sitting here, won Yates Cups in, you know, the span of, what is it? I think 3 seasons, right? Like, yep. Tom, you were 2014, 2015, 2016, right? So, yep. You know, in the span of seasons, all of us got, you know, to hoist that trophy against Western. Tom, you were against Guelph, but you did get to hoist it against Western at one point, right? Just one of your three, right? only one of your three came against the Western Mustangs. But, you know, I think, you know, we can all sit here and say, like, it is a massive hump. Like, those guys, there's a reason that program's at the top every year. They have the best recruiting. They have the best coaching. They bring in the best players. They develop them the best. You know, however it is that they do it, there's that, like, lure to the program that kids want to go there, coaches want to coach there. And I think that the OUA has gotten to a spot now where I think it's starting to diversify a little bit. I think there's more guys going to more programs, and I do, you know, I'm kind of hoping that there is going to be that four horse race at the top as we sit here right now with Queens, Windsor, Laurier, and Western next year, where those are kind of the four teams and they're going to fight it out together, and less punching up to Western, but everybody on a flat plateau. But you just got to go out and do it. Like, I don't think that there's necessarily, like, I don't look at the Laurier roster from last year and say, like, if we just had that piece, right? Like, if, again, like, it wasn't kicking. Like, kicking wasn't the issue. And there's, you know, there aren't a ton of players in their spots at Laurier right now, because I said this to you guys at the beginning of the year. They had a top three player at each position. Sometimes you lose football games, and unfortunately it happens. I think for Laurier it's difficult because they played some of their best football going into that regular season game, and then they just had the most brutal first half of all time. Like, they were down 27-0. Everybody was calling them frauds before the game was over, and it was like, how did we get here from beating Ottawa and beating Windsor as bad as, you know, as big as we did? Like, how are we sitting here and saying that we're down 27-0 at the half? And then they come out and score, and they score, and they score, and they score, and they're up 28-27. It's like, okay, here we go. This is the team. But, you know, they in those two games, they played eight quarters of football. Laurier played two quarters of football. And we said that going into the Yates Cup. You can't play one quarter, good quarter of football against Western and expect to win. And they lost the Yates Cup. They played one good quarter of football. It was the second quarter. And, you know, their championship hopes kind of came to an end. I credit Western for being as good as they are. I don't think there's a piece. I think it's just doing it. You know, like, there isn't, I don't think that there's a scientific formula here to beating Western, right? Like, when I beat Western, we were down 21 points with 8 minutes to go. And Michael Neville just said, Brenton Hall's down there somewhere. And he threw it into the end zone. And all of a sudden, Carson Ouellette scores, Curly Gittins Jr. scores. And, you know, we're kicking a field goal from 26 yards out to win the game. And all of that happened so quickly. Like, it just unraveled. Like, I don't know if that's good football. Like, I can't sit here and say that was the game plan, but you just have to adapt, play within the lines, play within the 60 minutes that you're allowed to play in. And you just have to go out and do it and hope that each guy's going to do their 1/12. And again, if they roll out the guys that we're looking at them rolling out next year, every game Laurier is going to play, I have the full faith that 51% of the game, each guy's going to win their one-on-one. Right. So and that's all you can do. So I don't think that there's a specific piece, but it's just about doing it. But, I think it could come down to a mental thing. Right. Like, this is the block and we just have to do it. And that makes the difference between good athletes and good football players and great football players, because the great ones are able to get over them, those mental blocks, and finish the job. So, you know, we'll see if 2024 is going to be their year, or if, you know, the reign of Western is going to continue to roll for a fourth consecutive year, which I really, really hope isn't the case. you know, I've got bigger plans for Laurier than that, but, you know, you got to go out and play the games, and Western has their reputation for a reason.
He's the voice of the Laurier Golden Hawks, and we are so lucky to also call him a friend of our program here, Jack Moore. Jack, thank you as always for joining us. Can't wait to talk more as we find out more information about all the things in the off season through the summer and leading into what, as you set up talking about that top four and all the other good teams. And I know you have something else you want to say there, that this year is promising to deliver us. My apologies, Jack. Yeah.
No problem. I just wanted to make sure I got this in this morning. We got some sad news. Glenn McDonald passed away, longtime TV sports producer in this country. He did a phenomenal job. He was one of the guys who was a cornerstone at the Score, and especially during their Vanier Cup coverage. And he was my producer this year and the last couple of years for the Vanier Cup. So I got to work with Glenn a little bit, and we got the news this morning that he passed away. So he did a lot of really good work for U Sports Football. football, and when it was on TV and is on TV, he was one of the key pieces behind it. And I think all the big names in sports media you see who are putting out touching tributes to him just kind of speak to the person that he was. And, you know, gone way too soon, 54 years old, from pancreatic cancer. And I just want to, you know, mentioned that he was a big part of the coverage on the television side. And it was a tough morning for a lot of us in sports media in this country when we got that news, because he was not only phenomenal at what he did in his professional life, but just, you know, a top tier human being as well. So I just wanted to send my condolences to his family and everybody who knew Glenn, that, you know, we're going to miss him a whole lot, and the sport's going to miss him a whole lot moving forward.
Appreciate you adding that shout out. Obviously a huge loss to the sports community and to his family. Our thoughts go out there. Absolutely. Jack, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to talking all things OUA football and, of course, Laurier Golden Hawks football as the year progresses. Take care, my friend.
Go Hawks, soar above.
That is a wrap on episode 10 of the Exit Meeting series. Tom, you know what that means we have coming up, right?
There's a
full episode. A full episode thanking long snappers.
There's a stampede of purple dust coming our way next week.
It's Western Week, baby. It's just you and me, Tom. We're just going to dive into all things Western Mustangs. And as we said as well, a special guest coming your way for a pod not too long after that. So we'll be talking Western Mustangs very soon. So check us out right here at the 55.